Radio Prague News.
Prague offers the best quality of life among the cities of the former Eastern Bloc, according to the latest survey by Mercer. A total of 1,350 people applied for asylum in the Czech Republic last year, according to figures released by Eurostat. And Czech choreographer and former dancer Jiří Kilián was inducted to the prestigious French Academy of Fine Arts. The Czech capital offers the best quality of life among the cities of the former Eastern Bloc, according to the latest survey by the US consultancy Mercer. Globally, Prague ranked 69th ahead of the capitals of its Central European neighbors Budapest, Bratislava and Warsaw, also making the top 100 from the bloc were Ljubljana, Riga and Zagreb. European cities continue to have the highest quality of living in the world, according to Mercer, with Vienna, Zurich and Munich ranking first, second and third globally, though the German city shared the honour with Vancouver and Auckland. Minsk, Tirana and St. Petersburg remained the lowest-ranking cities in Europe this year, while Sarajevo rose three places due to a fall in reported crime. The opposition Civic Democrats have called on MP Václav Klaus Jr. to leave the parliamentary caucus, saying his remarks have long harmed the party. On Tuesday, Mr. Klaus likened the transposition of European Union directives, most recently the GDPR, to the deportation of Jews imposed by the Nazis during the war. After protests by several parties, party chairman Petr Fiala apologized for the unfortunate comparison. Mr. Klaus, the son of the former Czech president, after whom he is named, has said he will not leave the Civic Democrats voluntarily. A total of 1,350 people applied for asylum in the Czech Republic last year, according to figures released by the European Union's Statistics Office on Thursday. Ukrainians traditionally made the most asylum requests, followed by Cubans and Georgians. The overall number of people seeking asylum in the European Union dropped by 11% year-on-year to 580,000. Most of the asylum seekers came from Syria, Afghanistan and Iraq. The state forestry company Lesy České republiky said that around 1 million cubic meters of timber were damaged by the windstorm Eberhard that swept through Europe on Sunday. Damaged trees represent around 8% of the annual quota of felled trees, with damages estimated at €500 million. The biggest calamity in the state-owned forest so far was caused by Hurricane Kirill in 2007, which devastated more than 6 million cubic meters of timber. The Czech video gaming industry increased its revenues by 34% last year to 3 billion crowns, the Czech Game Developers Association reported on Thursday. Czech game developers brought out 31 new titles in 2018, mostly for PCs and consoles. There are currently around 75 companies developing video games in the Czech Republic, employing some 1,500 developers. Czech choreographer and former dancer Jiří Kilián was inducted to the prestigious French Academy of Fine Arts at a ceremony in Paris on Wednesday. Kilián, who is 71, is only the third Czech to become a member of the Academy since its founding in 1816, along with musician Antonín Rejcha and painter Václav Brožík. The great Czech choreographer is perhaps best known for his work with the Netherlands Dance Theatre. As its artistic director, he created over 50 works for the company. And finally, a quick look at the weather. Friday is expected to be partly cloudy to overcast, with occasional showers towards the evening. Daytime highs will range between 6 and 10 degrees Celsius. I'm Ruth Franková, and that's the end of the news.
You're listening to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio. I'm Daniela Azarová. Coming up in today's programme, thousands of Czech students are expected to support the Fridays for Future movement, a student wake-up call to address climate change issues. And Prague tops the post-communist capitals in Mercer's Quality of Life Index. Later on, a look at the key moments in the Czech Republic's NATO membership these past 20 years. All that coming up, so please stay with us. Thousands of high school students across the world are preparing to take part in a big protest against the lack of action being undertaken to stop climate change. The movement, known as Fridays for Future, also has a Czech branch, which has attracted over 1,000 students and 100 academics. Tom Akincrow has the details.
Why study for a future which may not be there? That is one of the questions that Swedish schoolgirl Greta Thunberg asked herself when she refused to go to school and decided to sit in front of her country's parliament until progress was made in combating the onset of climate change. The initial lonely protest soon inspired an international student movement called Fridays for Future, which attracted followers from more than 100 countries across the world. A few months later, 15-year-old Greta was asked to give a speech at the United Nations Climate Change Conference in Katowice. Her statement was frank.
You only speak of green, eternal economic growth because you are too scared of being unpopular. You only talk about moving forward with the same bad ideas that got us into this mess, even when the only sensible thing to do is pull the emergency brake. We cannot solve a crisis without treating it as a crisis. We need to keep the fossil fuels in the ground, and we need to focus on equity. And if solutions within this system are so impossible to find, then maybe we should change the system itself.
Now, a worldwide student protest has been prepared and will take place on Friday, March 15th. In the Czech Republic alone, marches will take place in 18 spots across the country. It is not the first protest organised by the Czech branch. In February, they organised a march urging Prague City Hall to declare a state of climate emergency in the capital, a move that many other capitals across the globe have gone through in recent months, including London. The initial Czech branch's founders numbered just 3 people, but after an influx of followers, one of its leaders, Lucia Mislíková, says she believes thousands could be marching in the streets on Friday.
We were very pleasantly surprised that after making the event public and some communication with the media, there was a quick growth in interest. Currently, over 1,000 high school students have signed our petition, which was a very nice surprise for us. New signatures are still coming in, and we expect it to be a big protest numbering in the thousands across the Czech Republic.
Počítáme s řádově s tisícovkami z celé České republiky.
Her colleague Petr Dobravský told Czech Radio that pushing for political change is the best course of action because the public has no control over the greenhouse gases produced by multinational corporations. Some fellow students have accused those who will attend of simply avoiding school, but the organizers insist the amount of time spent on planning the event and pushing through demands far exceeds the hours they will miss out on.
Tom McEncrow with that report. Moving on now, for the 10th year in a row, the Austrian capital has topped the global rankings of the Quality of Living Index compiled by the US consultancy Mercer. For a third year in a row, the Czech capital is ranked 69th overall, but is number one among cities in the former Eastern Bloc. So what does Vienna have that Prague does not? Brian Kennedy reports.
Based on 39 factors within 10 categories, the index covers potential hardship posting factors such as climate, disease and sanitation standards, ease of communications and physical remoteness, the local and political and social environment, and political violence. According to Mercer, Prague offers the best overall quality of life among the cities of the former Eastern Bloc, better than the capitals of its fellow new EU member states in Central Europe, Ljubljana, Budapest, Bratislava, Warsaw, Riga, and Zagreb. So what exactly is the Czech capital doing right, and where is there room for improvement? Well, Mercer doesn't publish detailed comparisons, as it monetizes its index in part through the sales of reports on individual cities. But local Mercer representative Petr Boldish explained Prague's ranking in general terms.
Survey is not intended as a general comparison of all cities around the world, but as a measurement for expatriates. So it looks at these cities from the perspective of people who are sent to do work abroad and to live with families in that specified city for a certain number of years, let's say from 2 to 5 years. So this gives a completely different perspective than other rankings.
Right. For example, expatriate families would almost invariably need to rent property they wouldn't be buying.
Yes, example, medical care, some private medical facilities which are, let's say, available and where you can communicate in some foreign language like English, French or German.
Can you say where Prague excels in these areas?
Prague leads the ranking within Central and Eastern Europe. The factors where Prague ranks higher are, for example, political stability, medical care level or low crime rate. And also, Prague is quite famous for really excellent public transportation and the offering of various recreation facilities.
What does a city like Vienna, which is ranked number one, offer expats that Prague does not?
So it's quite broad question. Vienna is a really stable, safe city, which has a really excellent housing, excellent natural environment, has a number of schools, international schools for expatriates, and scores much higher in transportation than Prague. For example, due to international airport, which has much broader connections to other regions of the world than Prague's airport, for example, just in a nutshell.
Scores attributed to each factor are weighted to reflect their importance in particular to expatriates and permit objective city-to-city comparisons, Mr. Boldish notes. Apart from the main index, Mercer also produces annual reporting focusing on special aspects of living in any given city. In this regard, Prague ranked an impressive 40th globally, he says, ahead of scores of European cities, including Milan, London and Paris.
Brian Kennedy with that report. A reminder that you're with Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio, where it's now time for our main feature. And of course, this week, Czechs are looking back at 20 years in NATO. The country joined the alliance together with Hungary and Poland on March 12th of 1999. Since then, NATO has grown significantly and undertaken several major international military operations. Vít Pohanka highlights the most important developments in the alliance over that time and how the Czech Republic participated in them.
The official ceremonies and celebrations of NATO enlargement had hardly finished in March 1999, and the alliance started one of the biggest operations in its history. The crisis in Kosovo had been brewing for some time. Predominantly Serbian armed forces stood accused of ethnic cleansing in the province directed at local Albanians. Despite the international diplomatic efforts, the government of President Slobodan Milošević refused to come to terms with the insurgents of Kosovo Liberation Army. Bloodshed continued and thousands of ethnic Albanians were fleeing the country. On the 24th of March, NATO countries led by the United States started bombing Yugoslavia. American President Bill Clinton spoke to the world.
Our mission is clear: to demonstrate the seriousness of NATO's purpose, so that the Serbian leaders understand the imperative of reversing course, to deter an even bloodier offensive against innocent civilians in Kosovo, and if necessary, to seriously damage the Serbian military's capacity to harm the people of Kosovo. In short, if President Milosevic will not make peace, we will limit his ability to make war.
But the Operation Allied Force, as it was officially codenamed, didn't have the approval of the United Nations Security Council. Russia and China refused to sanction it. So President Clinton was making an extra effort to explain why the air campaign against Yugoslavia was necessary.
Now they've started moving from village to village, shelling civilians and torching their houses. We've seen innocent people taken from their homes, forced to kneel in the dirt and sprayed with bullets. Kosovar men dragged from their families, fathers and sons together, lined up and shot in cold blood. This is not war in the traditional sense. It is an attack by tanks and artillery on a largely defenseless people whose leaders already have agreed to peace.
Moreover, like in any military operation of such scale, there would be casualties, warned Bill Clinton.
There are risks in this military action. Risks to our pilots and the people on the ground. Serbia's air defenses are strong. It could decide to intensify its assault on Kosovo, or to seek to harm us or our allies elsewhere. If it does, we will deliver a forceful response. Hopefully, Mr. Milosevic will realize his present course is self-destructive and unsustainable.
The Czech Republic, Hungary and Poland weren't asked to participate in the operation. After all, for Hungary it meant that the bombing was directed at its neighbor. Many Czech politicians even openly criticized the decision to attack Yugoslavia, including Václav Klaus, then Speaker of the House of Deputies, who would later become the Czech president. Nevertheless, the Czech Republic opened its airspace for NATO planes and the government officially agreed with the action. Minister of Foreign Affairs Jan Kavan, together with his Greek counterpart Georgios Papandreou, came up with a diplomatic initiative to stop the NATO bombing in exchange for a promise that Milosevic's government would then start negotiating. Minister Papandreou tried in vain to persuade the American Secretary of State Madeleine Albright to support the initiative. After the meeting in the United States, he explained.
The suggestion we have made, Greece has made, is that this is a temporary pause with a very specific end to the pause, which would mean automatically military action would begin again without any new decision. What our hope would be, of course, is that we wouldn't need to have that automatic trigger, that we would be able in that space to actually get an agreement.
This was important for the Czech Republic. It was completely new member of NATO and it was trying to be a potential diplomatic deal breaker. But Secretary Albright made clear what the official American position was, and she was polite but firm.
The United States and Greece are together in fully backing NATO's efforts to oppose ethnic cleansing in Kosovo, and in our determination that only when NATO's five conditions are accepted and start to be implemented will the air campaign stop.
In other words, there would be no negotiations and the bombing would continue until President Milosevic fulfilled the NATO conditions, the most important one being complete withdrawal from Kosovo. So the first clumsy Czech diplomatic initiative within NATO failed. But once Yugoslavia withdrew its troops from Kosovo and the bombing stopped, the Czech army took an active role in the Kosovo force, or KFOR for short, and the Czech task force remained deployed in Kosovo for the next 12 years. While the Balkans kept diplomats and European military busy in the 1990s, the 21st century started with a shock that some predicted, but nobody was really prepared for.
Whitson, hold on just a moment. We've got an explosion inside.
The building's exploding right now!
Assembled here, the police officers, FBI agents.
The Al-Qaeda attacks on the United States on the 11th of September 2001 shook not just America, but the whole world. All of a sudden, it became clear that NATO must prepare for a new kind of threats and warfare. Transformation became the word of the day, and right at the time when Prague was preparing to host the NATO summit in 2002. It was to be the first such highest-level alliance meeting in a post-communist country. The Czech president Václav Havel talked about it when he visited the American president George Bush in Washington a few months before the summit.
I hope that big step will be done in the summit of NATO, which will be in Prague, which is for us big honor. I think that now it would be important if NATO will able to redefine itself, to find its new identity in this very changed world. And especially now, after 11th September, I think there is a lot of new kind of evil in this world. And it is necessary to face to this evil and to face all who support it.
When the Prague NATO summit opened in November 2002, the then Secretary General of NATO, George Robertson, outlined the main agenda.
Prague is a transformation summit. It is a truly defining moment for the Atlantic Alliance. We will welcome new members, take on new missions, modernize our military capabilities, and strengthen our relations with friends and partners throughout the Euro-Atlantic area. And by doing so, we will reinforce that essential transatlantic bond on which our security and defence still depends.
Czechia, together with Hungary and Poland, supported further enlargement of NATO to the east. The Prague summit eventually invited 7 countries to become new members: the 3 Baltic republics, Slovakia, Bulgaria, Romania and Slovenia. The President of the United States, George Bush, stated,
America's very pleased by today's decision. We believe it strengthens our nation's most important alliance, NATO. By welcoming 7 members, we will not only add to our military capabilities, we will refresh the spirit of this great democratic alliance. We believe today's decision reaffirms our commitment to freedom and our commitment to a Europe which is whole and free and at peace.
Thus, the officially declared goal of the Czech Republic, that NATO shouldn't stop at its borders, was reached, even though the new member states formally joined the alliance only 2 years later, in 2004. The Prague NATO summit concluded with declarations of unity, but the alliance was split about the US-led invasion of Iraq in the March of next year.
On my orders, coalition forces have begun striking selected targets of military importance to undermine Saddam Hussein's ability to wage war. These are opening stages of what will be a broad and concerted campaign. More than 35 countries are giving crucial support, from the use of naval and air bases, to help with intelligence and logistics, to the deployment of combat units.
Like the strikes against Yugoslavia 4 years earlier, the US-led invasion wasn't sanctioned by the United Nations Security Council. France and Germany openly refused to support the military action against the regime of Saddam Hussein. The Czech political representation was split. But President Václav Havel, during his last weeks in office, signed the so-called Letter of Eight, a message of 8 European heads of states and governments that backed the US stance. Even though it was not a NATO operation, the Czech army sent a specialized chemical unit to Kuwait as the invasion was looming. But when it became apparent that there was no threat of weapons of mass destruction, the Czech Republic maintained a low-level military presence in Iraq until the end of 2008.
This animation illustrates how NATO's ballistic missile defense capability is designed to work in a hypothetical scenario. NATO conducts thorough planning to make the best use of all weapon systems and sensors under its command.
Another issue that for some time defined the relations of the Czech Republic with NATO and its allies was the intended missile defense system. It was supposed to shield the member states from a potential attack from the Middle East. Czechia was supposed to host a radar and Poland an anti-missile base. In 2008, the then US Secretary of State, Condoleezza Rice, came to Prague and signed a treaty with her counterpart, Karel Schwarzenberg.
It is an agreement that is befitting for friends and allies who face a common threat in the 21st century and wish to address it through the application of the best defensive technologies that we can bring to bear.
However, there was a strong opposition to build the radar within the Czech Republic, not just among some politicians, but in the public. There were demonstrations against the radar, and the Associated Press recorded this protester who, according to the polls, spoke for the majority of Czechs.
So we're protesting against it because there were no information for the citizens before the elections, so nobody knew about this project, and because we completely disagree with the current US policy.
In 2009, new American President Barack Obama decided to ditch the plans to build a radar in the Czech Republic. Instead, the United States developed a slightly different system with a missile interceptor based in Romania. Throughout the past 2 decades, the Czech Republic has been sending its military units to various international NATO operations. Even though Czechia has been giving less than 2% of its GDP for defence purposes, it is an active member of the alliance, argues the Czech ambassador to NATO Jiří Šedivý.
I don't feel any weakening because despite a relatively low input, we have still a very respectable output in terms of our contribution in two operations. Afghanistan, we are the seventh highest contributor. We have a parallel contribution of units in Lithuania, Latvia. Late in this year, we will be air policing the Baltic area from Estonia. We have several very much respected and appreciated specializations, such as in the area of chemical, biological, radiological defense, special forces, and so on and so forth. And indeed, we've had for the past about 4 years quite a robust economic growth. In real terms, actually, we have increased our defense budget, I think, by 40% since 2016 in real terms. But indeed, because of the growth of the GDP in the relative terms, it makes just a very marginal increase.
Be it as it may, the political and public opinion consensus remains that the Czech Republic should stay in NATO and should gradually increase its investment into defense to about 2% of GDP by 2024. Vít Pohanka, Radio Prague.
And I'm afraid that's brought us to the end of today's programme from Prague. You'll find us online at radio.cz. Should you like to contact us, then our email address is english@radio.cz. We'll be happy to hear from you, as always. And of course, remember, you can also follow Radio Prague on Facebook and Twitter. This is Daniela Lazarová saying thanks for joining us today and take care.